A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we review one comic and only one comic because Pete requested last week. He said we were talking about too many comics.
Too many.
So instead, this is a big announcement. Going forward, we're going to review one comic, which is that one comic where Dokken kills Punisher. And we're going to review that every week.
Same comic.
The same comic for the rest of our lives. We may alternate it with
until we get to the bottom of it.
Yeah. Why was that an issue and why was it so awesome?
Why did anybody make that?
It was great.
It's not called The Stack. It's called The Bump.
No, I'm kidding. We're going to talk about a lot of new comics that come out this week, and we're going to kick it off with a big one, The Human Target, number 12 from DC Comics, written by Tom King.
Too bad Justin's not here to talk about this one. Oh, wait!
Hey, I got news for you, buddy.
Hold on. You are hepped up today, Pete. Written by Tom King, art by Greg Smallwood. This is the final issue of Human Target, wrapping up the whole mystery. Lots of questions here. We're definitely going to get into spoilers because I don't think there's any way of talking about this issue without getting into spoilers. But, Justin, it sounds like you were very pleased with how this wrapped up.
I mean, I've loved this series from the jump, and the fact that it ended in a place that I didn't see coming, and we sort of shifted our focus from our main character to another character that is maybe has been the main character all along, which I really appreciated that, with a nice twist ending. Beautiful art by Greg Smallwood.
This Super Tight Bananas, the art. It is.
Oh, sorry. I've been gone for 2 weeks. I thought we stopped all that.
No, it's still going.
It's been going.
But I do think this is, if you haven't been reading this for some wild reason, despite all of the recommendations we've dropped, pick this up in trade.
This is a perfect comic book from the first issue to the last.
A perfect.
It is. I don't want to repeat everything that Justin said, but it really is. This is the sort of book that Tom King was born to write. He crushed it in terms of format and pacing. The characterizations were phenomenal. It was emotional by the end. Like Justin said, the twists were great. And Greg Smallwood knocked it out of the park with some art that I would call petite danana.
Nice.
There you go.
Yeah.
Let me also say just real quick, Pete, hopefully you're going to be positive, but you never know with you. You're what we call a wild card. The way that this book both did the sort of noir storytelling while also servicing the superhero side of the story, I thought is very hard to do and very rare to see. And it crushed it.
I think sometimes with Tom King, it can come off as a little bit like sad or dark or depressing or weird.
Both.
This did things in a way that was super impressive as far as like keeping us guessing by giving us enough information and letting us kind of lead us down different pathways. I was really impressed with how this ended, and then like the last issue really did a great job of like reiterating how great it was in such a nice way. I was super impressed with this. It started a little weird for me, but man, did it stick the landing. I was just really blown away by the artwork the whole time. But man, what an adventure, what a ride. Definitely worth checking out for sure. There's no question.
So to get into spoilers, I want to mention a couple of specifics here, and I'm curious to get your guys' bead on one of them in particular. some things that jumped out to me just in terms of the plot. So Human Target, ostensibly, as far as we know, dies in this issue. Ice is there when he passes away. She is tasked with dumping his ashes and passing on his legacy. Ultimately, by the end of the issue, per his wishes, it certainly looks like she poisons Lex Luthor like was supposed to originally happen. Sort of bringing that to a close there. Great scene with Guy Gardner on a ice floe where once again he gets one punch knocked out, like the classic thing from back in the day in Justice League International. So that was a very fun callback here. But Justin, you seem pretty sure he's dead. I'm not so sure. And
oh, interesting. Well, in what way? You don't think he's dead in this book?
Maybe I'm misinterpreting this, but there's the scene in the Italian restaurant where she's talking to the dude.
Billy Joel.
Yes,
scenes from an Italian restaurant.
There's a bottle of red.
Yes.
Down East, Alexa, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. No, there's the dude at the Italian restaurant who kind of looks like Alfred and has worked with Christopher Chance before. They're talking about his legacy and how sad it is and how he could have worn any face, but ultimately they use some phrase there. I'm sorry, I'm forgetting exactly what it is. But at the end, Ice uses an Italian phrase as he's walking away. But he looks back at her and smiles and says, really should have learned Italian. That would have sold it. The impression to me there, and I don't think it's definitive, and I do think you could take it another way, is that that is Christopher Chance.
Yes. And believe me, I was looking for that every which way in here. Here are two reasons why I want it to be that he did die. I think the ashes, breaking the bottle of ashes over Guy Gardner's face hits so much harder if he does die.
Yeah.
This is a Black Label book, so there's no continuity worries here. It's just purely about the story. I think that's better. And the fact that this scene that you're talking about happens at the beginning of the story, that makes me think it's a strange spot to put a reveal that your hero is still alive over the course of the book. But having said that, I love it as a story element because it makes us think, A, B, it is sort of like everyone that Christopher Chance was around, he affected them and made them into these believers in injecting mystery into the world and being able to be different people at different times. I love that as a philosophy. And I feel like this guy's embodying his philosophy is the way I took it, where he is saying like, we're all sort of playing a game. We're all doing a dance here. And I think in this book throughout the run, it's been, does Ice love him? Or are they just doing a dance? And you feel like he loves her, I feel like, the whole time. But he's always sort of dubious of her.
I don't know about that.
Well, that's what I thought. It's my interpretation.
I'd throw out there that I think the moral here is the real Human Target is our hearts.
Oh, I would agree with that.
Oh, thanks, Pete.
Wow.
Well, anyway, I
think that's all. On a t-shirt.
I think that's all well said, Justin. I ultimately think it sort of doesn't matter which way it goes. He could be alive. He could not be alive. It's up to you and your interpretation, and I think that's pointed. I'm glad that they didn't make it explicit, but it does feel like the sort of book where Tom King probably knows the answer there. He may or may not say, but I think it's important when you're doing that semi-ambiguous sort of thing that it's clear there's a direction. But ultimately, regardless, it's about Ice, like you said in this last issue, and that really works.
Yeah.
Why don't we move on to another book, Rogue and Gambit, number one from Marvel, written by Stephanie Phillips, art by Carlos Gomez. This is the first major book that has shown this fan favorite couple, as far as I'm aware, since this X-Men reboot with Krakoa. We're finally getting to see them together and alone and working together, albeit with Manifold to solve a new mystery that they've been tasked with by Destiny. The big thing that I'll throw out here, I think it was Stephanie Phillips did X-Terminators as well, right? And
love.
Which was great. She's sort of eking out this side of the X-Men universe, which is the raunchy, drunken side. And I'm very much enjoying that.
Yeah. I love that side. I love X-Terminators. The only thing that – why is Gambit such a doof now? Remember how he was so cool back in the day. He was coming in.
Yeah, but I think people have had
he's throwing cards.
Yeah, but that's the thing.
People about Gambit, or are you talking about yourself, Justin?
Yeah, exactly. I think people have had time to like sit with Gambit, and it's like clear, like he plays with cards. You know what I mean? So, you know.
He charges those cards with kinetic energy, with potential energy that converts into kinetic energy. It's huge. He's
Pete,
a science-based character.
I feel like
character.
I made a good burn, and then you were like, I don't know, playing with cards is lame. But traditionally, everybody was like, ugh, Vegas, lame.
Have you ever tried throwing a card, Pete? It's very not easy.
I like the Rogue and Gambit relationship. It is one of my favorite romances, not just in Marvel Comics, but in comics in general. I think Stephanie Phillips really gets it across here. I would love even more of it going forward. A lot of time is spent with Destiny and Manifold and all these other characters who are very fun. And Carlos Gomez draws some fun superhero comics. But when it comes back to it, it's tough. It is compared in my mind to, I believe, was the Kelly Thompson series that was also Rogue and Gambit that was phenomenal and really dug into the relationship. We're not quite getting that here. We're getting Goofmatron with both of them. So I'm still having a good time, but I want to dig into them a little bit more.
I think Steph is killing it on this. I feel like this is a real great package here with writing and art, making a... fun couple even better. I thought this was like could have gone either way, but I was really impressed with the choices that they were making, especially right off the bat. A lot of action. It's fast moving. I loved it.
Give me some more romance between these two. Make Gambit cool again.
There's plenty of time for that. There's plenty of time for that.
What do you mean? In life?
I'm going to make you a hat that says that. It's going to be a red hat that says make Gambit cool again. Purple hat,
oh,
maybe.
Cool. I'll wear it all the time. I'll wear it all the time. No questions. I don't know if there's plenty of time for that, Pete. Life's short. What are you talking about?
I'm just saying, like, we can build up to it. You know what I mean?
Make Pete cool again.
Do you ever see those, like, those memes where people list famous people's ages and they're like, Harrison Ford didn't start until he was 35. This person didn't start until they were 45. It's never too late. I always see that. I'm like, well, at a certain point, it's going to be too late.
Oh, wow. Look at you.
Wow. Okay. Okay, spoiler. Okay, Mr. Internet over here.
Phantom Road, number one from Image Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Gabriel H. Walta. This is a wild mashup of dual-style road book mixed with zombies and alternate realities and other things. I've already mentioned too much about the plot because it goes on so many wild turns here. We've talked a lot about how, as much as we like Jeff Lemire's book, they often feel very sparse. This is also sparse, but it is leaving room for some balls-to-the-wall action that is going on in these pages. And I love this book. This was easily one of my favorite of the week. Pete, I'm curious to hear from you. I definitely thought of you when I read this because I felt like this would be right up your alley. Was I correct?
Agreed. Yes, this was such a badass comic. It also had like a weirdness to it that I really appreciated coming from the art. I thought that it was such a cool tone that was set for this comic, a great world that was kind of built here. I'm very excited to spend more time here. It seems insane, but man, what a great ish.
Great-ish. Gabriel Walta loved the art. The same artist from the Tom King Vision book, right?
Oh, wow.
I love this art. And I agree with you, Alex. Like, it's been a big complaint of mine that a lot of Jeff Lemire's books, I feel like, was there a comic here? Is this just the air in my hands?
Oh, come on, dude.
But this one feels
give it a fucking...
To be clear, and I think Justin's probably on the same page as me, great ideas in there. He works with phenomenal artists, but it really is like this puff of a comic when you're reading it.
I'm being too harsh because like I do like them. Like I forget the name of the one with the animals. Was it Primal?
Yeah,
where they were going into space and all that. And I love it. Great, but every issue I was like, it was just like a little bit of a dream.
Yeah, and sometimes this one, it's nice to have a dream in the middle of your stack.
A dream in the middle of my stack?
That's right.
I'm here for the business. I'm a business reader. Boo. I want stuff to be happening.
Well, then you must have loved the next issue we're going to talk about, which is 90 solid pages.
Just give me one second, because I don't think I'm going to love what you're about to say. Because Phantom Road number one does have a lot of great business. I'm super intrigued by what's happening. We get two characters here that are interesting. We don't learn much about them, but I'm on board with the way they are. And I love, there's just some great cutaways and cutbacks where that's like, okay, here we go again. And that happens like a couple times in issue one. So stuff is happening.
Shazam Fury of the Gods special, Shazamily Matters, number one from DC Comics, written by Zachary Levi, DJ Quattrona, and Colleen Duran, Faith Herman, and Amanda Dibert, Tim Seeley, David F. Sandberg, and Scott Collins, Ross Butler and Josh Trulio, Grace Caroline Curry, Adam Brody and Kenny Porter, and Henry Gayden, art by Freddie Williams II, Erica Henderson, Jorge Corona, Scott Collins, Andrew Drillin, Damian Fulton, Mark Norton, and Scott Godlewski. This is exactly what you think of it is from the title. It's not main continuity DC Shazam family. It's literally for the movie, and it's working with people who act in the movie or wrote the movie or produced the movie. Here's what I'll say. I want to say something nice about it first.
Wait. We've got to be clear. This, I was hoping this was going to be a really fun kind of campy thing about Family Matters. It's not.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Family Matters, the TV show?
Yeah. That's right.
Well, I'm sure that DC, when they put this out, said, did I do that? And they found out. So there you go.
Do you have any big red cheese?
When I saw this, I don't really like the first Shazam movie, and I really don't like Zachary Levi. He is like nails on the chalkboard to be perfectly frank. So
You didn't like Chuck at all?
Yeah. Oh, God.
You didn't like Chuck?
He's trying, and I say this as a podcaster who is definitely doing this as well, he is trying so hard all the time. Yeah, it is very annoying.
And except for with his vaccination takes. He's not trying super hard.
That's also bad. So I was very not into this and didn't want to like it. But here's my compliment here. What DC did, and I didn't look up the editor, and I'm sorry about that. They stacked the deck with this book because they took all the people that like should not be writing comic books and paired them up with great writers, awesome artists, and essentially put together this collection of stories that are a series of stories about the Shazam characters from the movie falling through a series of doors, one after the other.
Yeah.
Which is bad, but they are well-done stories regardless because you've got, like, Tim Seeley, you've got Kenny Porter, you've got Josh Trulio, Erica Henderson on art, Scott Collins, all these people who are great. So I was very begrudging when I was reading it. Pete, though, for more positive, it sounds like you like this a bit more probably than me and Justin.
Yeah. I mean,
I was sort of a member of the Shazamly.
So there was, first off, let's back up the truck a little bit. There are just some great covers. But I thought that there is, they did like a great job of giving you so many stories. There's definitely something for everybody in here. The second story about Darla was great. The art in the third story, the big game was really great. The Eugene one was really good as well. I felt like there was a lot of different styles and a lot of different stories in there. So if you like Shazam at all, you're going to walk away with something that you're going to appreciate.
Nice. Real nice. I don't know about that, because reading this and reading, remembering reading recently the great Shazam series that focused on Mary that came out, I want to say like 3 weeks ago. They ended 3 weeks ago.
The new champion is Shazam. Yeah.
Yes. And the other stuff that's been going on Shazam has been so interesting. And this to me was a bit of a, like, especially the first story, I was like, oh, this is almost insulting to reading Shazam. This is almost like, oh, you like that stuff? That's not what this is. Well, so good luck. And I agree with you, though, that there are some good stories in here, especially in the art is good, especially as it goes on. But it just, I don't know how to make these books that can somehow have some fluidity between the great storytelling that's happening and some other titles in the Shazamly, while releasing this book that is clearly meant to draw in some fans of the movie. That I guess there's a movie coming out in the Shazamly, a Shazamly movie.
Yeah, I think so. My big problem, and I know I was joking about this before, but seriously, the idea that every single story is a different member of the Shazam family. I'm not going to say Shazamily because that's stupid.
You can. It's a shorter way of saying
it. You just said it.
Oh, God damn it. So they have this hall of doorways that take you to different dimensions. They established it in the first movie. Almost every story is a different member of that family accidentally tripping and falling through a door, which is very weird. It is a weird repetition there. But at the same time, again, if you're looking, DC clearly was tasked with like, we got to put something out for this. And kudos to the editorial team here because they did a yeoman's effort with putting out this book. It's also, again, 90 pages. So you're going to find something that you enjoy if you're looking for it.
Agreed.
Let's move to another book.
It's a little bit Shazambling as it goes on.
Fair enough. Let's move to another book that I was not ready to like and was a little pleasantly surprised by. Curious to hear from you guys.
Yes. Well,
Hallow's Eve, number one for Marvel, written by Erica Schultz, art by Michael Dowling. This is spinning off of the storyline from Dark Web.
Dark Web.
There you go.
Introducing a character, Hallow's Eve, who used to hang out with Ben Reilly. She has
Dark Reign was the one about the junk, I think.
About the what?
No, wasn't that Spider-Man Dark Reign? Wasn't that one?
No, Dark Reign was the one where Asgard. No, that was Dark Reign was the line-wide labeling where the Thunderbolts were all villains masquerading as Avengers.
Okay. Green Goblin took over the the Thunderbolts and sort of ran the Avengers as well.
Very weird that no person actually wrote that Thunderbolts title, but the art on it was very good. The Hallow's Eve book, however, is surprisingly good. I was very weirded out by this whole concept when they introduced it in Dark Web, where she takes various Halloween masks and becomes those characters. It works here, and it sounds like it worked for you guys as well.
Works really well. And let me say, you're talking about Spider-Man Reign, Pete. I didn't know what you meant by junk. And then I remember that you refer to penises as junk. And that's when I figured out.
Well, the nice thing about junk is you can be talking about a female or male. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Junk is junk. You know what I mean?
Wow, that's good. Like, that's so inclusive.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's
you're
beautiful.
A real ally,
what a beautiful way.
Somebody's got to be on this talk about podcast.
What a beautiful way to talk about that in any context. junk. And thank you for being my primary care physician as well. Because you really take care of my junk.
How was your junk today?
All right. Well, let's talk about Hallow's Eve. I love the start of this. I also really think it was a cool way of doing the mask so we could kind of see it in action.
The movie The Mask.
Nope. I'm talking about the way that she uses
wait
different
they call
ass,
a load of me.
Ass,
right?
I also really like when she put on the ghost one and we got to see like inside deposit boxes, which if I worked in a bank, I'd be looking inside every box because that seems like a ton of fun to do. And we got to see collectible.
I don't think you could do that.
Oh, sure you can. If you work there?
Nah. It's not like there's a key that opens all of them. No, it's not.
Have some fun. See what's in those boxes, man. I mean, what else are you there for?
Well, here's the thing. If you're going to buy into that side of banking, you're going to have to be robbed every couple of days, probably, too, right?
Anyways, I just thought...
By the way, did you know if you're working at a bank, if money falls on the floor, it's yours?
That's right. Say it's like a three-second rule, like if you work at a restaurant. Except for money. But you have to keep it in your mouth. That's the thing. The mouth.
I really didn't think I was going to like this issue as much as I did. I thought they did a great job of having a lot of action and also a lot of cool art choices in here as well. I was really impressed with this book.
Agreed. Hallow's Eve in Dark Web, I was like, I'm not sure. She didn't do it a ton, I feel like, and I couldn't quite tell what the point was. Also, the name Hallow's Eve felt like next door to what was going on. It's so Halloween-y that I was like, this feels out of season. But it really works in this book. I thought the art was very good, and I'm definitely down to find out what happens next. This is a good sort of character that feels like villain, but does some heroic things, almost Black Cat adjacent.
Oh, that's a sweet spot for you.
Skull and Bones, Savage Storm, number one from Image Comics, written by John Jackson Miller and James Mishler, art by Christian Rosato. This is a spinoff of the video game that I'm going to assume is called Skull and Bones. I have literally no context there whatsoever, but it follows two ships, one with pirates, one without, who both crash land. Is that what you say? On the same island.
a rocket.
Crash land.
Anyway, they both end up.
I believe shipwreck is the term.
That's what I was looking for. They encounter some weird stuff on the island. Having no context for this, I was still kind of into it. I like the idea of all the mystical stuff. If you're a fan of Pirates of the Caribbean franchises, I guess I feel like that's a sweet spot here. So fun stuff for that. I mean that sincerely. Like, if you like that stuff, ghosts and weirdness and pirates, and there you go.
I recently rode on the Pirates of the Caribbean ride,
and that thing.
What? What are you talking about?
You're Disney flexing flex. On us, bro. You're Disney flexing on us.
It's not that much of a flex. I mean, I've said that, so maybe the first one was a flex. Now I'm just sharing a piece of my life with you, Pete.
Okay.
The Pirates ride, they've clearly changed.
Did you do that?
We did. My sister's a Disney head, and she sort of ran the trip for us. So we were hopping around, going into different things.
Must be nice.
You need a pro. If you're going to Disney, you got to go with a pro because it makes it way better. But the Pirates ride has changed so much. It's clearly like a ride that was created at a time where they didn't really care about a lot of things, like a lot of wenches. They've taken out the wenches. They changed an auction, which much for the better. They've added a bunch of Captain Jack Sparrows throughout, which is to me the weirdest part.
Doubled down on the Sparrow.
Well, no, it's like you might as well take those out now. Some things have changed with Mr. Johnny Depp, so pull them out. But that's all to say, piracy on the brain. This was just, having not played the game either, just some intense piracy, and otherwise I don't know too much about what the overall story is here.
Yeah, I felt like the art did a great job of kind of giving you a little bit of an old-timey pirate kind of feel to it. I think it made a nice, enjoyable tone. There's a ton of pirate action here, nonstop throughout, and it keeps piling on. You think like, okay, this is it, and then there's more, and then more, and then more happens. So there's a lot of fun twists and turns in the action. It's quite a epic tale in this comic.
It feels like a lot of piracy was just flexing and just being like, I'm this guy, so watch out, be scared of me. Because there's a lot of like, oh no, that's that guy, and then you run and you're like, oh, it's this other person. Wow, well, very intense.
I'll tell you what, this is probably the whole point of the book, but it definitely made me interested in the game. So as advertising, it worked. So there you go.
Got you.
Stargirl, The Lost Children, number four from DC Comics, written by Jeff Johns, art by Todd Knock. This is a big, and I don't say this meanly, exposition dump issue that explains so many things that have been going on, from this island that these lost sidekicks are trapped on, to who the evil chicken lady is, to a wild reveal of the ultimate villain, question mark, of the
series.
Yeah, certainly seems that way. This is Jeff Johns and Todd Knock completely leading into DC continuity, but like we talked about a lot, I think this is here Jeff using his knowledge for good, I would say. You disagree,
well,
Justin.
And let's say, I think definitely that, and I actually really enjoyed this issue, but it's Jeff Johns using a lot of the recent big continuity swings he's taken.
Yes.
Very aggressively, where it's like referencing Flashpoint Beyond, which I was like, did a ton of people, is that something that is really entering the DC canon, which I think Flashpoint is. Flashpoint Beyond feels less so. And there's a lot of stuff here that I was like, oh, this is very much circling the wagons on Jeff, the ideas that Jeff Johns is interested in. So that's very specific. But I do think a lot of them are interesting. And the fact that the focus on the sidekicks is such a nice little breath of fresh air in a lot of the larger continuity ideas here. And the ideas at play of like some of these people we haven't heard of because they were plucked out of the time stream and their continuity before they had a chance to make a mark is such like a interesting idea for a sidekick, which is all about feeling like, am I going to make a mark here? I'm just working for this adult hero as the sidekick. So I think the themes are incorporated in the story in a great way.
Yeah, I thought this was really fun. I liked the kind of last page reveal. The art had a nice kind of like cartoonish feel to it, so it kept things light and fun. Yeah, I thought this was a great issue.
Good stuff. Moving on to Murder World Game Over number one from Marvel, written by Jim Zub and Ray Fox, art by Netho Diaz and Lorenzo Tometa. If you haven't been reading this, this is a series of one-shots that follow a bunch of characters in a Squid Game type situation where only one of them can win at the end and they're going to win a prize. It's being run by Arcade, and we'll be getting Marvel cameos, but through very realistic life model decoys. There's a let me get into spoilers here, but there's a phenomenal twist right at the beginning. We got a cliffhanger in the last issue. The Black Widow, who's been tracking down Arcade, shows up. It turns out at the beginning of this issue, and I love this twist, she is also a Leif model decoy. It's not the actual Black Widow. I thought that was so well executed. Everything was so dark in this issue. And I know I said this with the last issue, and this is, again, spoilers. If you don't want to know, turn away. At the end, Arcade not only wins but gets away with it, and Black Widow is left with being taunted by Arcade. This is, and I know this sounds over the top, this is something I have waited for my entire life as a comic book reader. 100%.
Oh my God.
Completely sincerely.
You wanted Arcade to win your whole life.
Yes. Ride with Arcade?
I ride with Arcade. And here, let me just explain it for a second. What I know it's kind of like it's an insane, circuitous way of coming at it. But the idea that he works as a guy who's like, I spent probably millions of dollars setting up this Murder World thing to kill people. And literally every time we see him, he loses. How does that work as a business? How does he make that work as a business? Avengers Arena, another great series by Dennis Hopeless, really got close to that in terms of showing Arcade as a legit villain who can get with this stuff. But it made me so happy. I read the last couple of pages several times just to be like, I didn't miss it, right? Like, he actually won. He won here. Made me so happy. So thank you, Jim Zub. Thank you, Ray Fox. I am a happy comic book reader right now because Arcade won at the end of this crossover.
I love the idea of a tiny Alex Zalbin finishing up a fucked up bag of Oreos, writing a letter to Stan Lee saying, but how does Arcade's business work? How does he make money if he keeps losing? And they're like, this kid's taking this too seriously. Put a stop to him. Otherwise, he's going to lose his entire life to talking about comics, which he did.
Oh, no.
But I agree with you. Having Arcade win here is fun. It's unexpected. It is dark in a great way. We see sort of the protagonist that we're riding with suffer greatly, and then we're just like, later we follow Arcade out the door in a way that I thought was really cool, like you're saying, Alex, and the door's open for more.
So yeah, that's Arcade didn't win. He temporarily put off his losing for an issue.
Hey, newsflash, Pete, that's what winning is. I don't know if you ever followed a sport of any kind, but winning is just temporarily putting off losing.
Yeah, there's been, until you get to just the Super Bowl. There's one football game that happens a year, and whoever wins,
that's it.
That's it.
Yeah. I know we're getting close to Ted Lasso time, so you like maybe reassociating yourself with sports metaphors, but you better soon because it's coming, and you got to remember what it's like.
Anyway, this is a great crossover. We've also, on the negative front, talked about how it's very confusing to read because it's all a bunch of number ones, but I do hope, I'm sure Marvel is going to be collecting this. If you missed it, go back, read it. I thought it was a very fun crossover.
Yeah, this is a great.
And it feels like
it's a great issue. I thought that like the twists and turns really were kind of like you're riding for this and you're like, what's going on? This all really delivered in this issue and made it worth it. It was a lot of fun to read this issue.
Agreed. It feels like maybe this strategy of a bunch of number ones that you have to sort of find if you like it is something that's going to be continuing at Marvel.
Boo. Let's move on to another number one, though. Buffy the Last Vampire Slayer Special, number one for Boob Studios, written by Casey Gilley, art by Joe Jaro, Maria Keen, and Leah Caballero. So I went through a bevy of emotions with this because Sarah Gailey, who wrote Buffy the Last Vampire Slayer and is currently working on the Buffy the Vampire Slayer title, or the Vampire Slayer title, excuse me, phenomenal. So I was really looking forward to this, and what I saw was another writer. I was initially bummed. I think Casey Gilley did a great job. I think the team did a great job. What I am missing here, even though the characterizations are good, is the old man Buffy end of the world scenario. This felt to me like a good Buffy the Vampire Slayer adventure without those stakes of vampires have taken over the world. What do we do next?
Wow. Interesting.
Weird. I thought this was such a great issue, and I thought for sure you were going to love this. I felt like they did such a great job with the characters and the voices. It really felt like the Buffy we knew and loved. Also, this is a great jumping on point with this one. I think if you haven't been picking up Buffy for a while, this is a great jumping on point. Nobody wants to make fun of me because it's the number one. Okay, fine. I'll move on.
No, I want to make fun of you because it's a one-shot special that takes place after a miniseries and may or may not be continued, so I don't think it's a good jumping on
point. Oh, well, I thought it was a great jumping on point.
Just from my point, I like to make fun of you about stuff you don't expect to be made fun of.
Ah, damn it. All right. Well, anyways.
Gotta
I really
keep it fresh, babe.
And I thought this was pretty solid-ish.
It's funny, Alex, that you liked this less because I actually felt like it took some of the larger ideas from the other series and focused them up on sort of the internal characterizations here and really got into Buffy as a parent here
and,
to Alex Thessaly. And
taking a piss or something in the background there. Let's wait until he's done.
No, he's
thanks,
like,
guys. Please don't talk while I'm doing that. It's very
disgusting. Yeah.
Running sound effects of like glug 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 glug. You're like an old timey hobo pouring a drink in a community theater play. But what I was saying is like I feel like this sort of solidified a family unit in a great way, and I would dip more. I'm not a Buffy guy, but I would dip more into this world. I really appreciate, and it's also there's a lot of good jokes in this issue, and it's
fun. Thought it's a very weird thing, and it's very specific, and I don't think it's totally fair. You know what? I do think it's totally fair, but I like this issue. I agree with you guys. Well done. Good characterization. If you like Buffy, you like this. But I would urge you to go back and read Buffy the Last Vampire Slayer, which I think had a very different tone and direction that I didn't necessarily get here, versus this feels consistent with the show, which very weird criticism, but... Yeah, I don't know. I'll ride with it anyway.
You don't like it because it's like the show you love? Got it.
Yeah, it makes total
makes sense.
I don't know, man. I don't have a shelf full of DVDs behind me or anything. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you
do.
Ready?
Sandman Universe, Dead Boy Detectives, number 3 from DC Comics, written by Pornsack Pettishot and art by Jeff Stokely. In this issue, one of our Dead Boy Detectives is down, and the other one is trying to find out what is going on with these Thai ghosts in order to get him back in the game. There's a lot of romance stuff going on here, so I want to kick it over to Pete, our romance expert. Pete, what did you think about this book?
Well, first off, we got to talk about the art. I mean, this is just... some really next level art. I loved it so much. Super impressive. Also, the shading and the facial stuff. Really very, very cool. I love the style of it. And this was a very interesting comic. I loved all the relationship stuff. It's setting things up in a nice way. I'm very much appreciating.
This comic is a little dense. It's a little like It reminds me of Books of Magic. I think I've said that in the past, but the issues that felt a little like wooden and hard to understand, because I like a lot of the elements here and it just feels like it's not fully threading all of the needles. It does remind me of Runaways, and maybe that's just me connecting Tanya in this comic to who has the Staff of One in Runaways.
Oh, Staffy. You're thinking of Staffy.
Oh, Staffy. That's who it is.
Nico.
Nico, yeah. So, there's some good points here, but the story is just a little, like, when the character's like, no, this is what's happening, I'm like, oh, thank you for telling me, because I don't know for a lot of it.
I agree with you on it, but I will say, for any of our listeners who have kids, I've mentioned this a couple of times, but I've been taking my kids to the comic book shop now on Wednesdays, which has been a lifelong dream. But my oldest,
and now you're 13, passing the torch.
I am. They'll be on the podcast next week, and I'm gonna start taking a break, so that's pretty good.
You're retiring?
Yes. Fresh blood. I'm out. A weird place to tell you guys during this Deadpool Detectives review. My 13-year-old loves this book. My 13-year-old is like very into Stranger Things. This is way gorier, I think, than Stranger Things, but like, if you have a teen who is interested in comic books, I think this is a good one to hand them, because there's like some romance stuff with teens. There's some gory stuff, which teens like as well. So that's definitely working in that aspect. I'm on the same page as you, Justin, but just want to mention that for any of our listeners out there who might be in a similar situation.
If you are a teen.
Or if you are a teen, that seems impossible. Why would a teen listen to this? I am Iron Man number one from Marvel, written by Murex Ayodele, art by Doton Amanda. That was terrible. I'm so sorry. So no, this is a series. It's very different, but I would actually liken it to the Ant-Man series that Al Ewing did a couple of months back, where it's jumping through different eras of Iron Man and showing it in different ways. Here we get a wild sci-fi story of Iron Man in three different eras, which I was very surprised by and very into once I got a handle on the storytelling. But I was curious to hear from you guys. What did you think about this one?
I was also pleasantly surprised. I kind of feel like I walked into this with my arms crossed a little bit, but like, all right, another Iron Man story. What's this going to be? And I was super impressed by this. I loved the art style. It really gave Iron Man a freshness that we haven't had for a little bit. So I was really impressed by what they did in this issue. Just kind of a different change of pace. The villain is weirdly hilarious with the whole guitar and shredding thing, but it made it light and kind of really changed it in a way that made it seem fresh and new. So I was super happy with this issue.
This caught me off guard as well. I really love the art, and I really love how the story is very different, sort of weirder than I would expect it. It reminded me of the Prophet series from Image, not the Rob Liefeld or Fabian Nicieza version, the Brandon Graham version, which got into some of the deeper philosophical underpinnings of Prophet and the super sci-fi, large concept thinking stuff. This feels like it has that, and maybe we're going to get a bunch of Iron Man stories that take Iron Man out of like his like Playboy ways and into sort of just like some deeper, more interesting places.
The last kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kid series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more. Speaking of deeper, more interesting places, Where Monsters Lie, number two from Dark Horse Comics, written by Kyle Starks, art by Piotr Kowalski. This is continuing the story of a community of serial killers. Here we have a final girl slash guy who is coming back to the community as a cop now and trying to take them down. Things go horribly wrong in this issue. Pete, take it away.
Yeah, First off, I just want to say it's too bad we didn't talk to the author, because it would have been nice to talk to somebody about the craziness that is happening in this issue, the building towards such mania that would have been nice to be able to talk to somebody about. Because
it's wild to bring that up, because we actually had Kyle Starks on our live show, and we talked to him not just about the first issue, but you ended up spoiling the second issue as well. So we talk to him.
Seems like a fun issue. Thing to go back.
This very issue.
Yeah. Go back and check out. This was like a horror movie for me, where I was yelling at the comic, like, no, don't do that. What are you doing? Don't just monologue while everybody's getting murdered. Like, it was killing me. And then, you know, I really love the kind of wanted poster where you got everybody kind of like, with their name and kind of their deal a little bit. I thought that was super helpful, because when they put Pearl in the cop car with the innocent kid, and I was losing my mind. I was like, no, what are you doing? This is really enjoyable. Also, making my hair gray at the same time. So they are really killing it with this book. The art and the storytelling are a whole nother level.
First off, let me say, making your hair grayer. Let's not get crazy.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Thank you for that. Yeah.
Second, I love the idea that Pete,
turning
after
a Santa over here.
I know. Believe me, I'm on the front. I'm on Doctor Stranging it.
Yeah.
But let me say, Pete, I love the idea that you line up all your comics and yell at them like kids. Like, oh, you over here. What do you think you're doing? You're scaring me. And then you, okay, Spider-Man, you're going to come in here and act like that? I appreciate that. And how is your lawsuit going, reclaiming the name Fuckmaster from this comic? I know that's an ongoing litigation that you have to deal with.
Yeah, I'm not allowed to talk about it until it's over. But thank you for checking in.
Ongoing trial. Grand jury. This comic is crazy. It's super violent. If you want to see the bad guys win a lot in a row, pick it up. Very fun.
Blue Beetle, Graduation Day, number four from DC Comics, written by Josh Trulio, art by Adrian Gutierrez. We are reviewing the English language version, though there is a Spanish language version out there as well. This is continuing the story of Blue Beetle and a bunch of other colored beetles all clashing. We get an investigation into exactly what is going on here. And spoiler, but by the end, Blue Beetle really screws things up. And now Batman is on his tail. Like we talked about with the previous issues, I think this is a really good follow-up to the classic Blue Beetle series and a nice tee-up for the movie coming later this year that we know nothing about still. So I am enjoying it quite a bit.
I agree. I really like the like almost airbrush kind of art style that's very vibrant and kind of jumps off the page, really gives everything a nice kind of tone to it. I really love the kind of Batman tease where we had the Batman poster in the kids' room. That was really kind of a cool foreshadowing that we got in this. I think this is a lot of fun, and they are killing it. And I feel like this was a really cool ish.
It is strange we haven't heard almost anything about the Blue Beetle movie. Just like a couple little facts.
I agree.
Maybe.
Or like a costume reveal or something. It's weird.
Something. And do you think they're worried from an insect perspective that Ant-Man dropped off so hard the second weekend and they're doing another?
The name of the movie. Hey, take it easy with that.
Blue Beetle and the other Blue Beetle, Quantumania. So it does seem like a concern.
Also, do you want to say anything about the comic at all, or are you just going to talk shit?
It'd be badass if they called the movie Blue Beetle, also Quantumania. In your face, Marvel! Yeah, we're doing it too! We can get small too.
You want to say anything about the comic?
Yes, I will. Thank you, P. Always on patrol. Always keeping us on the guardrails. This comic is fun. This issue in particular felt like a middling issue, and I mean that. I know you hate
in
that
in the worst way possible.
Jesus Christ!
I mean that in the normal way, where it's like the next issue is going to be super good. I've liked what has come before, and this issue is sort of moving those pieces in place. Makes total sense that it's in the middle because it is in the middle. It's number four.
Yeah, I agree. I found this to be very super middle bananas. Let's move on. Talk about Cosmic. Ghost Rider number one from Marvel, written by, once again, Stephanie Phillips, art by Juan Cabal and Jonas Scharf.
Wait,
this is two stories of the Cosmic Ghost Rider, who, in case you don't remember, is Frank Castle, the Punisher, who is also a Ghost Rider, who is also a Herald of Galactus, who also worked for Thanos. The weird thing about both of these stories is there's a bunch of dreamlike stuff going on here where maybe he's Cosmic Ghost Rider, maybe he's not anymore. We don't know. Pete, you're losing your mind, so go for it.
Yes, this is absolutely fantastic. I'm so glad Cosmic Ghost Rider is riding again. It's such a fun idea, and I'm glad that other writers are exploring this and Marvel's letting them play. We got two great stories in here, really fun kind of playing with the audience and some amazing lines here where we kind of get Ghost Rider just being a complete badass, where there's the line where he's like, you know, obviously it was a dream. I would never hesitate to pull the trigger. Such a badass line. But yeah, the second story is a little bit more kind of tripped out, and you get a lot of different cool cameos and stuff in there. Man, what a great package. Two amazing Ghost Rider stories for the price of one. This is a hell of an issue.
Oh, wow. They made me pay twice, so.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No. Wow, bummer.
Weird way to find out.
Yeah.
I would charge you twice.
I like this issue. I like, what, at the counter? You're just like, sorry, sir.
Yeah. Like, you went to Cornell, you got to pay twice.
Like, wow. All right, Cornell tax, I get it.
Yeah,
I'm smart.
Let me ask you, Pete, how would you find out? Do you ask everyone what their higher education?
You can tell. You can tell.
I also, to be fair to Pete, I walk around everywhere holding my diploma in front of me.
I appreciate that, because a lot of times I'm like, did this guy even go to college? And then I'm like, yep, there it is.
That's why he has that giant backpack when you see him, so he can put his diploma in there.
He's got all the diplomas he has.
Phoenix University.
University of Phoenix, gotcha. You major in welding there online. This book is good. It's very fun. The Cosmic Ghost Rider is such a weird character, and I like that character. But the idea is, Pete, this is directed at you, no surprise, that you love grim and gritty Frank Castle from Normal Continuity somehow turns into Deadpool Ghost Rider is insane.
It's insane.
I want to see the progression where he goes from being – he goes from saying nothing but like, I'll kill you, to later he's like, I'm going to make some jokes tomorrow when I fly my ghost bike around. No, but, it's like just crazy.
Not to interrupt your bit here, Justin, but this was the thing that kind of threw me off.
This is real.
Oh, okay. This is off that as well. This is more in line with, it doesn't remind me in terms of the art, but it feels like it's almost going for a Jeff Lemire Moon Knight vibe in terms of what is reality, what is actually happening with Ghost Rider right now that potentially we're going to follow down the road, which is not what I was expecting for this book. I was expecting Ghost Rider, Deadpool, who also happened to be Frank Castle back in the day, as a twist just to kind of throw it in there. And that's not what this is at all. It's a little more of a Western, which is kind of fascinating.
Yeah.
Art is good. Cool. I liked it. It was just, I don't know, I had a hard time getting a handle on what it was.
Well, that's the fun of it, is they kind of like keep it where it was left as a character that's kind of like, wait, what? But if you think about it, if you really took a hardened person like Frank Castle, then like set his skull on fire as he kind of drove through the cosmos flying around, you know what I mean? You're talking to yourself in the space for a while, then you start doing quips.
It makes you get into comedy. Well, it makes you get into comedy.
We all have a comedy background. That's what you do in an improv 101 class to really get people out of their comfort zone.
You set their skull on. Yeah, exactly.
It's a torture. It's a torture situation. Well, like, let me just say this. I feel like the reason Cosmic Ghost Rider is Frank Castle is the same reason that that Homer Simpson is chosen in the monorail episode to be the captain of the monorail after the training session, where they were like, what's the weirdest answer here? Frank Castle, how about? And because who created Cosmic Ghost Rider? Was it Jason Aaron?
Donny Cates.
It feels like it was very much an arch writerly choice. And here we are now being like, yep, makes total sense that Frank Castle, war-torn, PTSD-stricken character, is flying around space making jokes.
There you go. Yep, Radiant Black, number 22 from Image Comics, written by Kyle Higgins, art by Eduardo Fregate and Z. Carlos. In this issue, we're following one of our two Radiant Black characters as they head to LA to try to sell a script. Justin, you were just talking on our live show.
Yeah, you're LA Justin, bro. Let's hear about it.
You were talking about how much you like the Clayface issue that focused on LA.
Yes.
This does that as well. Maybe not quite as dark. What did you think about this one?
Well, first off, let me say, Clayface One Bad Day. Get out there and read that issue. Great stuff. Reiterating that. You never know who's listening to one or the other. But this is like very, it does feel very LA. This feels like a personal story that feels real. It felt so real in that I felt anxiety reading it as it was going on. Like, you could just take the deal and then just sort of work around the situation so that you could then get the story to move forward. It's like definitely feeling the LA energy of it, being like, well, we could work out this deal if we just do it. But for character reasons and maybe the right choices, right reasons, our guy doesn't take the deal that is offered to him because of all the personal situations with his former friend, the girl that he dated, and now his friend is dating. Great drama here. But I will say I found it interesting, the landing place for it with, I got to move to LA.
Yeah.
Did that hit home?
Yeah, was that real?
No, I was surprised.
Seemed like it did.
I'm surprised that the character made the choice that he's going to move to LA. It'll be hard to, it's hard to share anything, but sharing Radiant Black powers bi-coastally, not easy.
I do love this dynamic, though, I will say, having two characters who are both sharing the Radiant. Kyle Higgins is doing a great job of playing a really interesting dynamic with both of them. And this is a surprising issue. It's very inside baseball. It feels like Kyle Higgins is probably writing about his own experiences with LA. But
yes,
I like every issue. It's a good title.
Yeah, this continues to be just absolutely a fantastic title. And each issue, they do such a great job. There were some really funny lines in here. You know, I like that. What was it here? Unless you really hate the storage hut. I thought that was a really funny line. It continues to be building out this world and giving us great character moments with a ton of action. The art is such a kind of like anime cartoon streamlined thing. It's fantastic. It's really solid. So this continues to be such a must pick up.
The Riddler, year one, number 3 from DC Comics, written by Paul Dano, art by Stephen Subic. We are continuing the slow march to link up to where the Riddler was when we found him in The Batman, the movie from a year ago, 2 years ago? I don't even remember at this point. Wow. Time, huh? Anyway, I'm going to just repeat what I said with the previous issue.
It was a year ago.
Sure.
What?
This series is great. They are doing such a phenomenal job of making the case for why the Riddler saw himself as a hero, why he identified himself with the Batman. I love this book. I'm kind of floored at how well it is done, both for the writing and
particularly, holy shit, it was only a year ago.
Particularly from the art perspective.
Yeah, I think the art's fantastic. But the fact that we have Paul Dano, an actor, writing this book that feels like it is so steeped in comic book storytelling, like really well done. And especially the fact that it's a prequel where you have to link up with a pre-existing story with the movie, that's extra hard. But I think it is doing a good job, like you're saying, Alex, of really staying true to these ideas of like, this guy's obsessed with Batman, Batman's his hero, which is a tension that we're like, well, he's going to be your enemy shortly. So that's hard. And the tension that, like, there's a lot of talk about Bruce Wayne. We know who Bruce Wayne is. That our character doesn't. There's a lot of things that we know that our main character doesn't. And when a character is the Riddler, whose whole thing is, like, knowing stuff that we don't and tricking us, it's a tricky writing problem. And I think Paul Dano's doing an amazing job with it.
I agree that he's a great writer, and it's surprising and fantastic. The problem for me is the Riddler, you know, this isn't my Riddler. And so the fact that they took this huge swing in the movie.
Jim Carrey.
But now that they're kind of like really staying with this, it's making me a little nervous. It just is such a kind of like darker version of the Riddler, kind of like got this really stalker, creepy dude thing. And it's like, we don't need the Joker and the Riddler all to be these fucking creepy ass guys, but whatever. The art's great.
I mean, I think they're pretty creepy in general. Because they're always like, somebody riddle me.
I'll also say, to provide a contrast between this, and not to be totally rude, but you take a look at this, where Paul Dano is clearly, and we've talked about this before, clearly like put in the work thinking about, okay, here's what the Riddler did, and here's what led up to where I was in this movie that was very like clinical and thought out, versus the Shazamily Matters thing where Zachary Levi is like, yeah, this is what comics are. We can make a bunch of flat, hacky jokes and throw it in there, right?
Roasted.
There's a huge difference between these two books, and it's both like, I don't know. I think it's fair for us to talk about, as people who've read comics for a while, that a lot of times actors are like, yeah, I was in a superhero movie, I could write a comic. Paul Dano is putting in the work here. Like this, if I didn't know it was Paul Dano, I'd be like, great, this is a Mike Carey Vertigo book, and it's that good.
Great call.
I agree with you, Alex, that Paul Dano is a great writer. I'm impressed with his writing. But it's also like, he just did his research for the character, and they're publishing his Bible that he made for this character. You know what I mean?
And this is Riddler, and this is the Riddler going forward in the main continuity of DC Comics. And I think that's wonderful. And we all agree. So
nope.
We move on.
Yeah. Somebody riddle me.
Oh my God. Spider-Man Unforgiven, number one from Marvel, written by Tim Seeley, art by Sid Kotian. From the prophecy that Justin put forward earlier in the podcast, looks like
we have another
crossover that's a bunch of number ones. Here we're getting a bunch of vampires in the Marvel Universe. They're all hotness in the Marvel Universe now, who are all trying to be better and trying to be superheroes. They mix it up with Spider-Man next issue. They're mixing it up with somebody
X-Men.
And so we're probably going to follow them over the course of this mystery that is plaguing them. What did you guys think about this?
I think this is cool. I feel like we don't get a lot of things like this where you lead with a new idea for a super team or a group of superheroes. Tim Seeley bringing it with these characters. I think they're well thought out and interesting. Get Spider-Man in here. The twists that happen at the sort of middle end of this, I thought were great. Set a nice little mystery that we don't have any idea what the solution is. And then knocks it over into like, hey, buckle up. We're going to deal with the X-Men. Of course, Jubilee just came off being a vampire for quite some time, so it makes perfect sense. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, I thought it was a lot of fun. I mean, that Tim Seeley guy really knows what he's doing when it comes to writing. It was a little weird where I was like, okay, it's Spider-Man Unforgiven, but then also the title is horror stuff, where I feel like we should have like, because when I hear Unforgiven, I think of like the Western or the Metallica mm-hmm. song. And so then it was like Unforgiven, but horror stuff. So I thought like it was a little weird about that. But other than that, I was really impressed with this as an idea. And I thought they did a great job of world building and then flushing it out to be like, and we're going to continue this in a unique way. So cool.
This see, when me... I see Spider-Man... When I see Spider-Man, I think of the boots that my younger daughter's classmate was wearing today at school that lit up. So that's where I had to stop.
Wow, like, that's very, very specific towards you, but okay.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, you thought one thing, and I thought this other thing. So it was hard for me to be like, oh, this isn't a kid's boot. This is a comic book.
This, to me, and I don't say this derogatorily, seems like a 2000s era Image Comics book. Where they're like, we're a bunch of vampires who want to be superheroes. Let's go be extreme. But Tim Seeley, like we're talking about, great writer, knows how to handle these characters, knows how to flesh them out. So
yeah.
If you're going to get somebody to kick off that sort of thing, I think that works. It was fun. I enjoyed it. But at the same time, I hate this place. Number six from Image Comics, written by Kyle Starks, art by Artyom Toplin. In this issue, our main couple who owns a house with every horrific thing that possibly could happen in the same house have become very ambivalent about it and very lackadaisical. However, we get a side plot that works its way in terms of a cult. I think it's fair to call it a cult that one of the characters was
even
in
a commune.
Yes, comes back to haunt her. It's terrifying. It's scary. I've said it before. I hate this place. I love this book.
Wow.
I also love this book, and I feel like they found a whole new way to inject horror. In the first run of this title, it was like every horrible thing is happening at this house, and they're stuck here. And we saw all that play out. And now it's like, well, turns out their personal lives maybe were also horrible. And finding horror in that place and making it very human while at the same time smashing that together with the fact that they live at the center of ghost house, ghost county house management situation is very cool. And I like the new angle and this new arc that we're getting to.
I hate horror, so I hated what was happening in this comic because of the fact that it's so fucked up and scary, and that fucking preacher guy hopefully will die a horrible death. But it's very intense in a good way that horror things are, so I think people will enjoy that. The art is absolutely fantastic.
Action Comics 1052 from DC Comics, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson, Dan Juergens, Leah Williams, art by Rafa Sandoval, Lee Weeks, and Marguerite Sauvage. The front story is continuing the arc of Metallo fighting against the Superman family. And then we get two backups, one from back in the day showing the time when Superman and Lois moved with a young John Kent to Smallville. And then another backup showing Power Girl, who now has psychic powers to go inside people's brains and help them out of problems. Beyond anything else, this is a great magazine. I know that's a weird way to put it, but
it's like, I like
50
that.
Pages long. And I was just, we've already been getting this mode with DC, which I think is very smart given the price of comics. And I know that's a calculated way of looking at it, but with having a front story and a backstory, I think that's good. That gives added value, but it also pays for, like, you're paying $5, $6 for a comic. You're going to get something out of it. Here, this is even more. This is starting to feel like a Superman family book, even more than Action Comics. And I love that in a time when we were talking about earlier on in this podcast, you have Jeff Lemire books that feel like, oh, I read that in 2 minutes and I'm done. And it was very good, but there wasn't a lot there. This is value added to the value you're paying, and it makes it worth a customer's time. Again, a very calculated way of looking at it, but I really, really appreciate DC is doing that, and I'm glad to see it.
Well, and especially because I think each story is so well thought out, and it's such a meaty story to bite into. So I love all of that. I also love that I feel like Philip Kennedy Johnson is really creating a Superman family here that feels different than the Bat family. It feels like a whole new thing for Superman to be dealing with, which is cool. And with Metallo, scared. They've plussed up Metallo to make him legit scary. The backup stories, the Lee Weeks art on the second story that Dan Jurgens is writing is so good. And then the Power Girl story is super interesting, very different art that's also great, but also like psychological and getting into different ideas of what it means to be changing and to be a hero. Like, this is just, if you had, I don't know how much this actually, with the price tag on this, if you have $6 and want to make the most of it, to your point, Alex, this is the book that'll bring you action, great emotions, great character development all at once.
Yeah, I agree. It's a really fantastic package. And I really like the Metallo kind of stuff here. And it's also like, you know, I don't like to say middling, and I won't, but it does a good job of setting things up for a future battle that's going to be really epic.
I just looked it up, and it's $4.99, which is a great value for this sort of thing.
Oh, holding the line at $4.99.
Wow.
Great rap, Pete. Love that. I do want to throw it out there, and then we'll move on to something else. I hope this is successful, because this really feels like, not to be too over the top about it, this could be the future of comics, or at least the future.
No,
seriously, or at least Juicy Comics, where frankly, it feels like walking into a comic book store and buying a comic and plunking down $4 for something that is 20 pages long, that is, and I know this is rude, but could be only 5 minutes of entertainment. It's not worth it. Like, the writers, the artists, the editors, inkers, colorists, everybody has clearly put effort into it. But from a time to money standpoint, as a consumer, it doesn't work. Here, this is 50 pages of three stories that are all really solid. Even if you didn't like one, it's still like, this is something that I could read through and sort of sit with for a while, and it feels like something that is palpable. It feels like something that is thick and sticks with you for a while. So I don't know. I've been enjoying the same sort of thing, like Wonder Woman. They have the main story, and then they have the young Wonder Woman backup story, which I think is great.
That's great, yeah.
Yeah.
Do that with Wonder Woman as well. Add a third story, like really fresh it out. Have a Yara Flores story or something. That makes it a really value-added prospect. And I know there are costs involved that probably make it cost prohibitive, but this seems like such a smart thing to do. So there you go. I know I've been talking about editorial directives a lot this podcast, but
that's good, though. That's the full genre.
Fucking Cornell.
Oh, do you want me to grab my, I was going to say resume. I can't think of the word. Diploma.
It would be great to have your resume.
You really undercutting.
Would you mind
your intelligence. You really undercutting.
You guys still haven't asked me about my qualifications. Spider-Gwen Shadow Clones number one from Marvel, written by Emily Kinn, art by Ken Zama. This is not spinning off directly, but following up on the recent Gwenoverse crossover that happened. Here we're getting, as you can figure out from the title, Gwen Clones instead. This is fun. I had a fun time.
I agree. It is fun. And they're going Gwen crazy. You want more Gwens? You got it. You got Sand Gwen. You got Doc Ock Gwen. There's all sorts of Gwens all over this piece.
Doc Ock.
So it's they're just kind of doubling down on the fun of it. And I think it's, you know, it's enjoyable.
I love Earth 65. We don't spend enough time here. The original Spider-Gwen series, I was a huge fan of. So to get this, which gets mostly back to that same energy and some of the different issues that were going on, is great. A whole new story where we've got clones popping up. I'm here for the ride. I like this. I want more Spider-Gwen.
Koshki in Hell, number three from Dark Horse Comics, written by Mike Mignola, art by Ben Stenbeck. This is continuing the story of, as you can figure out, Koshki, who is the undying, who is trapped in hell.
This guy never dies.
Deeper and deeper into things here. I know I've said this every single issue, but it is great to see Mike Mignola delving into this world, and every issue, just because of like the little teases he put in there, I'm like, we need a new Hellboy title. Please do it. Please. And as please much as I'm enjoying this, Hellboy, it's this anticipation of like, is that what this is leading towards? Is this the return of Hellboy? What is happening here? And it's not. I don't think it is.
I don't think it is either.
But I can't get past that when I'm reading this book.
But
well, I think that's what the idea here is.
Well, I don't know about
maybe
that.
Maybe this is it.
This is just a fun in the Hellboy universe story written by somebody who is known for something else. But I don't want to take away from this story because I'm having a lot of fun with Koschke here. I thought it was such a cool thing. Left off in a very interesting place. We only got one more issue. Each one of these have been a complete banger. I've been loving it. The art is just crazy type bananas and just such a fun feel to it and crazy action adventure. I love all the twists. This has just been a blast.
I think maybe like you're saying, like we want to get a new Hellboy. Maybe this is already happening. And instead of being like Hellboy with a lot of backstory, it's just like, no, he's got sort of a mustache goat situation and he's just bopping around.
No, it's a different character. We want Hellboy.
Here's the thing, though. I don't know if you're going to get.
We want Hellboy.
No. Should Pete join him?
No.
Okay, we'll add it in. We'll add it in on post. Yeah. I do
Pete,
like this.
And I want Hellboy as well.
I want Hellboy.
I want Hellboy.
Anyway, I understand what you're saying here. But I don't know. It's just sort of fizzled off a little bit. Great book. Definitely pick it up if you're into the Hellboy universe because it's phenomenal art and it's good, weird storytelling.
And what I was trying to say is I feel like if you like the Hellboy storytelling, that's what's happening here. Like yep. This is a character, a hero, quote-unquote hero, who is like – he can't die. He's trying to do this, accomplish his task. He's being frustrated constantly. He gets screwed over by a demon. Like this is a straight up Hellboy story. It's just as a different
demons.
Dude.
I'm looking at you,
Spider-Man.
Totally
understand what you're saying.
Don't fucking trust demons.
I know I said this about the last issue, but like, there's a difference between this and seeing Hellboy and the way that Mike Mignola left out the story. And maybe I'm forgetting it, but it was this BPRD phenomenal, enormous story where they're like, wow, it's the end of the world. That's it. And it's this feeling of like, what? I appreciate the fact that Mike Mignola left it on his own terms, but him returning here feels like this tease of a thing we're never going to get.
We might get it. It could be all building towards it.
I'd say I don't think you're going to get it. And if you do get it, it won't be for a while. So enjoy what you have, which is almost everything you want. It's just he's not red. So enjoy this.
How big is his fist? Does he have a big stone fist thing going on? Because I don't think so.
His cool facial hair. Hellboy just never had that.
That's different than a big fist, Justin. You don't get it. You get it, right?
Too small fist.
Yeah, I wish you wouldn't say big fist, but yeah, it I do understand
Pete
what you're saying.
Pete gets it. Pete, join me, Alex. Pete gets it. Pete.
There you go.
I'm just pumping my fist. Captain America Sentinel of Liberty, number 10 for Marvel, written by Jackson Lansing and Colin Kelly, art by Carmen Canero. As Captain America and his team are being beset by MODOK, the mental organism designed only for control, who is taking over their memories. Another phenomenal issue of this book that focuses in on Destroyer, a.k.a. the character that over the past couple of issues you're like, why is he here? Now we know why he's here. And it's a heartbreaking issue. That happens over the course of the year, continuing some phenomenal layouts from Carmen Carnero.
Yeah.
I love this book.
Love this overarching tale. This feels like a new universe that we're being introduced to by Lansing and Kelly. And I will say, apologies on the live show, I said Jackson and Lansing, but it's Lansing and Kelly is the name I should have said on the Clayface book. So my mistake, but this is just a great comic book writing team. Very excited to just read anything that they do, especially this book, because I love the larger, deeper mythology that they're constructing.
Yeah, this book has been really impressive. I'm a little over MODOK'd right now after seeing Ant-Man, but other than that, I feel like this has been such an amazing title and really impressive.
I will say it is
I thought the
wild.
Special effects were better in the book than in the Ant-Man movie.
Oh, wow. Well,
that's kind of what I was going to say, is it's kind of wild that they clearly, like, I don't know. I don't want to read too much into it, but it's clearly editorial directive of, hey, can you do a MODOK story? There's going to be MODOK and Ant-Man of the Wasp Quantumania. So that's why.
And they were like, hey, are you going to show a little butt? Is there going to be any butts in there? Or?
This is just the total opposite of what they do with MODOK in Quantumania.
Yeah.
In a wild way where we talked about how terrifying the MODOK was in the last issue. They find a new way to make him terrifying in this issue that is traumatizing if I was a kid reading this. But so well done. Such a good book. Definitely pick this up. Great. Breath of Shadows, number 2 from IDW, written by Rich Dueck, art by Alex Cormack. This is about a band who is heading in an army of darkness. Not army of darkness. What am I thinking of?
Anaconda?
No. Yes, sure. Let's go with they're doing an Anaconda and heading to find.
I mean, sort of.
Yeah, it's sort of an Anaconda. I was thinking of the Francis Ford Coppola movie that they traveled down a river to find Marlon Brando.
Outer Banks season 3.
Island of Dr. Monroe.
Not the Island of Dr. Monroe. What's the name of the movie? It's a classic movie. They play.
I'm pretty sure it's Anaconda.
They play Rise of the Valkyries on the helicopters. They're flying in.
Platoon? Is that Apocalypse Now?
Maybe I'm thinking of Platoon now, but it's not Platoon.
Apocalypse Now?
Apocalypse Now. Jesus Christ. Oh my God.
Okay.
Yeah,
I don't think Ice Cube's in that one.
Yeah. Actually, now that I think of it, it's more of an Anaconda. You guys take it away.
I mean, it does feel more like Anaconda. But Outer Banks season 3, I think, is a fine guess as well. We'll talk about that later. This story is interesting. It's a little weird. It's fun. I still don't know what the bugs are about, right? Does anyone know about the bugs?
No, we don't know about the bugs because they're trying to find some water that will make you see bugs, but he already sees bugs. So I feel like we might be getting some sort of circular storytelling on here that might not be abundantly clear until we get to the end of the series. But Rich Dueck, always a very confident writer, particularly in terms of horror. Alex Cormack, wild over-the-top designs, particularly when it comes to the bugs. So definitely worth picking up for all of that. Why don't we finish off talking about Spider-Man number 6 from Marvel, written by Dan Slott, art by Mark Bagley. If you haven't been picking it up, this is the end of the Spider-Verse storyline, and Peter Parker has been written out of the timeline, but not completely. He's come back with no powers. He is working just as a scientist. Silk is the main spider of the 616 universe. Everybody is on their back legs here, but we get some big twists by the end that might change the Spider-Verse permanently. This is exactly what you expect from a Dan Slott, Mark Bagley comic book, and I think it is 100%, bless you, delivering on that front.
Yeah, I agree. It's Dan Slott having a blast. You know, you got a lot of fun things in there. He even gets the spider buggy going, and that whole kind of like 8-bit Lego looking one that just goes beep boop is a ton of fun as well. So Dan Slott having fun is translates to fun. So great.
He's gone too far. Dan Slott's gone.
Really?
When he read the joke, Peter parked car. Talking about spider buggy?
I laughed.
I was like, well, what are we doing here?
Boo.
I mean, I was mostly just trying to make that joke, but like, I do think this feels like when you're a kid and you're late to the toy box and you're like, oh, I guess I'll just play with all the toys in the bottom of the box. Because it does feel like we're digging
How
into
many toys
some.
Toys did you have?
I'm not saying they're my toys. Okay. Now, what group of kids am I hanging out with? Are you jealous?
I don't know. I just to contradict you for a second, and I'll talk about some spoilers for the book. So we have this wasp queen who is trying to turn everybody into wasps. She will be the queen. There'll be the hive. It'll be all one hive mind versus the spiders, who are all their own separate thing. And the big revelation here is that Morlin and the other inheritors aren't these super strong vampire characters. They're actually slugs. They are slug avatars.
Yeah.
And it's, and I say this in the best way, it is the perfectly stupid, oh, of course, revelation that Dan Slott revels in. And yep. I think it absolutely yeah. works here. Only Dan Slott could make this work in terms of a writer. Because if I read anybody else doing this, like, I wouldn't get the sincerity that is coming through there. And that's what comes through in every page of this issue. That's what makes it work for me. That's why I enjoy it.
And I think that's fair. And like, you can tell that Dan Slott thinks deeply about all of this stuff. Like, he may be the deepest thinker of anyone who's worked on Spider-Man, maybe ever. That's because like, put out there. Why? Because like, the depth at which he reaches and makes these connections between the different aspects of the Spider-Verse is amazing. It's just, it feels like I want the story. The story needs to, I think, either be bigger or like bigger in that we get more of it, we get more issues about it, or smaller and then it can be a little bit more focused. Because I guess for me, it was hard to keep my eye on the prize of the story, the backbone of the story, when we're jumping into Bleep Bloop Guy.
Well, I think a lot of that is going to be how it all turns out next issue after yeah. the twist. So definitely stay tuned for that. And if you would like to support our podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Sometimes we talk
I think we're doing it.
Yeah, we're doing it. Sometimes we talk to Kyle Starks, right, Pete? And we ask him about comic books.
Oh, man, we should talk to him more about the second issue.
Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe and listen to the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram and Facebook, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the comic book shop.
Never forget that Shazam Lee matters.
No, oh boy.
Comic book club, comic book club. They sit on